Like, Bernard Stark and Blue with the Night, I'll just say, let's get straightened. First poem is called The Bathroom Ghost. I just turned 17 a day or two before, swung in on the grapevine to see the fortune teller. I heard she'd come to read the childless neighbors. She smoothed cards that were slick as screen servers, patterned like cruciform. Nothing marked her psychic car keys, faded denims, but the rumors focused on that blimp of lapis lazuli in one ear. It hovered like a third eye in the weirded air. Was it 10 years before the boy ghost appeared against the tiles in our bathroom mirror and smiled their smile? I can't say anymore exactly where I imagine, where I remember. I just slept on a bed of swords, and swords poked through hearts all over those archaic cards. She dragged her suitcase across the blue forest of my green jars. She unpacked it. So, thank you. Nice to be back and to see faces that I remember from way before. The next poem I'm going to read is called Pine Box in the Flea Market. And came about from a visit to the old Mother Jones Flea Market just up the road there a few years ago. Pine Box in the Flea Market. There's Charles.
Hello, Charles.
Rob.
The legend.
Pine Box in the Flea Market. The japanned pine box, with its cold brass handle and glass, makes mystery a room. You can hear me right,
yeah? Yeah.
Opening it will be intimate, you think, like the sudden glimpse of a heel when she nips to the back, leaving you and the bedposts to interpret this new hush. The box is burnished orange-brown, a finish the tint of Chilean myrtle, or something choked with paprika, with corners that could cut like fish hooks. Watch your thumbs. You want to poke about inside, to shuck it open with an oyster knife, spy in over the pine horizon, and wish, you're saying, wish. Inside, maybe a bunch of shrunken heads, a rosary of goat's teeth, bone blushing, a pair of rusty rubber-handled pliers, the peekaboo of a tarantula. You are a horsefly learning immensity at the brink of a donkey's ear. You can just picture shouldering at home past bleeding candles, black veils, mourners falling into step, and the shops closing on the curtain street. Someone flips a leash on his dog. This is the clock's insomnia now. Your shoulder killing you all the way home to a room on a numberless avenue where blue snow is falling. This poem is called Rachel's Coat Inside Out. It's floating on a wire hanger now, from the lowest branch of a corner of the forest. You unhook it, thumbs worrying stitches for what you missed last time in the dark, shifty material lining the interior. The slit left by a torn away button burns the nervous designs of moths flickering in and out of the collar. Your dreams make all kinds of nonsense. Locked cabinets with cobwebs across the wobbly glass knobs. Rachel adjusts on her nothing shoulders the winter coat she'd have worn. The stitching so gone in the pockets, her hands believe they're bottomless. She could keep a rotten one, the teeth, the pink loop of tail, brushed against us this close. And who would even know what she carried there? This poem concerns that kind of a universal experience all of us can relate to, no exceptions, of brushing a pineapple to make sweet noises. It's after an ASMR recording by someone called the Ephemeral Rift. It's called a pineapple massage. This YouTube video of a guy massaging a bespectacled pineapple with joke shop nose, brushing its spiny leaves and napping. Hello? Hello, tension? Hello, recurrent twinge in the joint? Out you come. He whispers nothings to the fruit. His day has been so long. I've never seen food used like this. The algorithm knows. The dry leaves crickle. He can feel doors opening in the rind. And it's as if I've slipped through one. I've listened from inside. I'm alone. Oh, I might have laughed at this before. Somewhere there's a man who comforts the people by means of a pineapple. He schools the ear in his curriculum of touch. Yeah, even when he produces that big kitchen knife and carves past the leafy plume to consume his client chunk by chunk. So the blade sinks inches from my ear and the air brightens yellow with the summer pent inside and is palpable. Just set my timer like a poem before that, but it'll be within time. This poem's called Eight Memoir. Goat has been following me for hours. There's a sign hung around his neck that reads, "Never forget." That's not very original, I think, but I'll see where it leads. "I have no grow for you, goat," I say, and clap my hands, say, "Goat." His goat eye asks if I'm half cracked. "Grand," I say, "keep walking." He follows at a discreet distance, beard jigging crooked as he jaws blankly at some grass he cropped. Years ago, I suppose. What am I meant to remember? Leaves are smeared on the street, a salad of dragged newspaper. Nobody appears to notice what's following me. I detour into a dive bar, roll a cigarette, drink a double whiskey, and try to decide where, if anywhere, all this might connect. Goat stands by the door, "Never forget," dripping to the tiles. I watch wet leaves fibrillate outside the window. Think of the small, delicate feather on this morning's egg. Leaf, light. Quick silverfish glimpses of the freedom that spooks on approach. The goat chews on, relentless. I mash my cigarette, touch my ear, and it comes off. This poem is called "It Cannot Be Salvaged." "Make me scrambled eggs," you never said. "I will so," I said, and never did. That's it. The season that's in it as well. Here's a poem called "Farm Breath." Mother of God. Two houseflies were making love. Well, that must have been their honeymoon. My grandmother struck them with a dishcloth. "The dirty fuckers," she said, sweeping them into her open pan like currants fallen from the barn brat loaf, at the heart of which lay a golden ring. Yeah, it was our name. This poem came about when I was living in Berlin, and I was in the pub, and I heard two people kind of boasting competitively about their incomes. You know, it seemed like there's a one-upmanship involved in it. I was looking for a job at the time, and kind of This being an awful question, what do you do for a living? So I imagine myself as part of that conversation with these. The triangle. I should never have written the instruction manual illustrating the 52 distinct tones that can be struck from the triangle, popular now in concert halls from here to Berlin. It's probably nothing but success. The joke at first was exquisite as a deviled egg, and the expression on their faces like a sweet pimento. You put the phony in symphony tonight, bring back the shiny hand dryer and the gents. Jobs dropped, and I went on, describing the point tapped just so for the blackbird's dome trill, the ripple on a clear lake in Sweden, the squeak of gas that jets from a roasting coal. One tone only audible to toddlers, another only to dogs. Of course I reddened when those rich fools Googled me. The search results proved it true. The hits were legion. Not only that, the book had entered its fourth print run and was forthcoming in Russian and New Norse. That's when it occurred to me that I was late to deliver the keynote address at the annual summit for lovers of the triangle. My lecture on the sweeter octaves of beryllium copper, how to damp it for the rustle, like the train of a bridal dress trailed over cobbles, or pitch it like the mice celebrating the owl's demise by lightning, or that ting so crystalline, it's called frost creeping. So I jotted some notes, grabbed my jacket, and said, taxi. I thought I might try a very, very recent thing. Indulge me. It's kind of a homage to Buster Keaton, the great silent film star, stuntman of sorts. And it's called Prayer to Buster Keaton. Blessed Saint Buster, in the crispy reels I stream, you're stoic and all backbone, resilient as birch. Bruises quadruple on set, but no wily switcheroos for stunt doubles. You slick tortoise shell comb across your quiff, tumble lamb-like from the heights. Divorce, drink, trampoline back in a fresh space, a cakewalk. No poppy inflects the great stone face, not farouche under the pork pie, more like a sieve for liquid instants of feeling restrained in general. Whether perched on a cowcatcher, shunting railroad ties to sneeze from train wreck, you were dangerous, or that rooftop leap that went wrong very right. It was an accident you let grow up. St. Buster, keep us from conniptions. Keep us frisky and adaptable on this path of fluke and gamble. Glorious fuck-ups I look back on and say, what luck. Check my time here. I started timing late, but I think I'm all right. Let's see. I brought two pig poems. I'm going to read a pig poem. And we're going to see where that gets us. And maybe I'll read the second pig poem for the time. This one's called Percy French. The dead pig brought me tremendous grief. Dumped down on his side like a pink beanbag full of bones. Prickly flesh with its sparse candied hackles and a jacket of lard in that little rogue eye. I rubbed him between the ears. I almost expected the tail to uncoil in a bag. I didn't even pause to ask how he got into the apartment, four flights up, and died on the kitchen sticky linoleum, with guests due to arrive any minute. The clinking wine bottles and heels preceded them on the stairwell. I fetched my carpenter's pencil quick and traced around the carcass, but it just wouldn't take. The nymph kept skiing off. The party let themselves in. Oh, we know what's following our canopies, one smirked. Get that man out of my house, I said. No, I love that pig. I can't say in all our lives we really knew each other. Yet here he was, hard clay, wadded about his trotters. Crisply pleats of his torso flabbed like an accordion. So I gathered his bulk in my arms, scrunched him up the best I could, and played that song he liked. Another kind of I'll read this poem. If you feel like you're going slightly mad while you're hearing it, you probably slightly are. It's called Quiche. Pain is a basement cafe, and all of us are scrubbing our merciless scrub, said the lady in the bloody apron, looking through me. I'd asked for a slice of quiche with goat's cheese, and my finger was frozen on the sneeze glass. Either I can be your mentor, or you can wear pajamas. The mechanic yelled over the racket in his garage when I suggested egg white was no substitute for glue. He climbed under the hood and hasn't come out since. A fly on the wall is enough company for a lifetime, my mother insisted, while I stood above her on a stool tending that fuse box. She wore black all the time, though. She kept spilling Lucozade on the Dachshund in her lap. I was out in the shed, reaching back to oil the hinges that held my wings in position. It was hot work. The last hour will be our worst, my wife said. And when I soared, our children were quick red ants leading her from the scene. Next poem I'm going to read is it was the 69th birthday of Matthew Sweeney last week, the late great poet, and a poem for him I'm going to read called Pinball, Matthew Sweeney. He let the oxygen mask slip from the crow's nest of stubble, so I leant in closer to catch that he didn't want the headstone. No wings. No spidery Gothic script. Instead, an old pinball machine should mark the place of his grave. He liked the plink under his thumbs. He talked bumpers, flippers, kickers, forbidden tilts, shooting for the moon. How a ball knocked out of bounds might come back, Lazarus, and win. I saw tournaments among the tombs. A horse box paused on the fresh earth, the generator set up to the slide under that knuckle of hill in Donegal. He inserts the first cold coins by the yew trees under the moon, pulls the plunger, flashing outlines pop and spark against the marble, focusing names and dates, gilt epitaphs and stone angels watching high scores rack up. I know before the night is out, his initials will join the wizards. Are you ready for time?
One more.
Yeah, I'll read a short one to finish. Thanks very much for being so listening so attentively and appreciatively. You're very good. It's called Self-Checkout, this poem. He told me he got lost once in the aisles of the Tesco Express. Not physically disoriented, more as if a glitch occurred in the escapement of a timepiece. A wheel the size of a coffee bean scooting loose, and all gravity pressed down on that space. All the apples fell there. I think I know what he meant. He'd left the gaff for celery, not an existential brouhaha. Some days I know myself only in the way you consume a crisp green apple, keeping distance from the core. It is necessary to remember the hardy green of the table in the kitchen in Aherlo, how it spoke to your elbows. I was once a seed, so minute, you could swallow me whole and not notice. Lean on me, be nourished. Thanks.